If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in every Wednesday at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Axar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Axar Command. Merry Christmas to everyone throughout the world, and a very, very beautiful Festival of Light. I believe the Festival of Light has been celebrated since the beginning of humanity. And so, once again, we are going to be looking at the increasing of light as we move into the Golden Age, as we integrate the light of our divine spiritual essence, and as we walk as the living light in these times. We are indeed the light of the world. So tonight I would like to share with you what it was like to be with Sai Baba during Christmas. I've been privileged to travel many, many times to India. I think I'm up to trip 12 now. And each time I have spent Christmas with the avatar Satya Sai Baba. And I was with him this time last year. I was singing in a choir with many international, well, I don't think there was a nationality that was omitted in the ashram. And Christmas at Prashanti Nilayam, which is the abode of peace, is different in the sense that people from all walks of life, religion, no religion, specific cultural backgrounds, caste systems, all of that gets combined into one great mass of humanity where we lay aside our differences and we simply come together to celebrate. At Prashanti Nilayam, all of the world religions are honored. Every single festival from all the world faiths is celebrated in Prashanti Nilayam. And because I came as a Christian esotericist 40 years ago to Sai Baba, I was particularly interested to hear from his lips about Jesus and to ask him the many questions which we would have if we had a divine incarnation in front of us that we believed to be God and we could ask any question we wanted to ask. So I came armed with a very long list of questions, and it was interesting because during the time of my first trip, which was after I'd been a devotee for quite a few years, I was finally able to make it to India in 1972 for the first time. And it was really the second large group of people from North America to ever go to Prashanti Nilayam. And in that group was my yoga teacher Indra Devi, and also the man who later became my mentor and teacher for the last many years, John Roger. And so it was a very special group of people who were by and large teachers in one capacity or another. And it just so happened that after we had our first interviews with Sai Baba, we all went off to do various stages of teaching and anchoring organizations, which then furthered the work of light on the planet. But at the time I went, I had all these questions about Jesus. What about the crucifixion? What about the resurrection? What about this? What about that? And unbeknownst to me, there was a woman by the name of Helen Shukman and her associate, William Tedford, who were just completing the Course in Miracles, which answered all of those questions. And that Course in Miracles was, of course, released to a limited group of people in 1975 and then later to a to the world. So all of my questions ended up being answered through the Course of Miracles, which, interestingly enough, Sai Baba said was the highest teaching on the planet. And he said that he inspired it. And, of course, it was given through the Master Jesus. So there was all my questions, one after another, that I'd had on my list, which I actually I didn't get to ask him at all, because when you're with Sai Baba in a personal interview, you're sort of like a deer in the headlights. That's about it. You just sit there and you listen. You don't do a whole heck of a lot of thinking or talking. It is so overwhelming to be in the presence of a 17-point avatar. We've had 15-point avatars, such as Sri Krishna, who shared a point with his sister, Subhadra, and his brother, Balaram. But we've never had a 17-point avatar. And this is a very, very unusual phenomena. He's known as a cosmic Christ, a cosmic Christ avatar. What is that? I haven't a clue. But I have been with him for many, many years, many, many interviews, many up-close and personal opportunities to be with him, observe him, and interact with him through these many years. So I want to share with you some of the things he said through many, many Christmases, really. In fact, there's been so many experiences, they all sort of blend into one at this point. But I kept a lot of notebooks and diaries at the time and noted down the things that he would say, which eventually got to be published in a little book called Be Like Jesus. And so I'll be sharing some of the things that he said directly and also things as I remember them. The first thing to bear in mind is that there's a vast network of brothers and sisters of light that come in to support the work of the predominant God form or avatar, that manifestation of the divine that comes from age to age, because we're never left without one who is as the light in this world. And that particular manifestation of God is not limited to, for example, 17 points, but what's significant is the fact that as we progress within the human ability to receive and integrate that light, the light of that avatar increases. So that's why we have an avatar that's now manifesting at the cosmic level, such as Satya Sai Baba. I recognize Sai Baba from my studies as an esotericist, because when I came into being involved with Sai Baba, I was a teacher of the Alice Bailey Blavatsky Theosophical Agni Yoga tradition, and I actually recognized him from his work, because the Bailey teachings are very clear in what the avatar would be doing and teaching and the signs to look for in his advent. And it's, you know, it was interesting to me, because I ended up being used as a prophet, even though that was not my intention at the time. I actually was the first person to actually officially draw the correlation between the Kalki avatar, the rider on the white horse in Hinduism, and the rider on the white horse in Revelation. In Revelation 19, verse 11 to the 17th, specifically mentions Satya Sai Baba, describes how he will look and everything. Moreover, the Prophet Muhammad received in a book called The Ocean of Light 99 marks by which the guided one, or this manifestation that they call the Iman Mahi, would be manifesting. So I was able to sit next to the woman, Irani Ma, who happened to be the woman who translated that book into English and presented it to Sai Baba. And that, of course, has been published since then in a book called The Glory of Puttaparthi by another devotee. But in that, it mentions that every little thing about Sai Baba was described by the Prophet Muhammad in that particular book. It's very, very interesting reading. And Living Divinity by Shakuntala Balu, B-A-L-U, is the woman that has written all about that, and you can get that book at the Satya Sai Baba Book Center in Tustin. And that will be something that you can read. It's very interesting. Then you have people who have volunteered to incarnate with the Lord. I knew the minute I saw him that I was one of those souls that had volunteered to come in to be with him. But he said, in a sense, all people who are incarnated right now are part of this great drama. this great emergence of light into the world and this great transformation that's lifting us into literally a golden age. The golden age of Satya Sai began in officially the year 2000, which was the year of divine love. Since then, we have been, believe it or not, actually entering into the golden age. Many people are living in that in terms of their consciousness, but very soon, he says very, very soon now, we will actually see such a transformation occur on the earth that we will be living entirely in a world of peace and love. Needless to say, there's going to have to be a lot of shaking going around and coming down for that to impact the whole world, because in the state it's in right now, it looks anything but peaceful and loving. Having said that, Sai Baba said that the transformation is in consciousness, which then is eventually outpictured in the world. But he said in this case, it will be fully manifested within the next few years. And he will be coming back in his third incarnation as Prema Sai Baba, which means love. Prema means love. Baba means father. And he looks very much like an Indian Jesus Christ. He has inspired many, many artists to draw him, and also he has materialized photographs or pictures depicting what he will look like. And in that avatar manifestation, I would surmise we would be in, by then, the golden age, at least according to what I've understood Sai Baba to be saying. The life of Jesus was interesting because it's said in the Bible that if all the books could be written about everything that Jesus said and did, there wouldn't be enough room on the whole earth to contain them. And probably that would be true of Sai Baba, because already now we're back behind in trying to keep pace with all the many, many things that are being done every day. It's just a normal, ordinary business as usual around the ashram, which is in Andhra Pradesh state of South India, closest city being Bangalore. So one of the things that was interesting to me at Prashanthi Nilayam, aside from seeing all the castes and creeds in one melting pot, each singing the names of each other's manifestation of God, we would sing Christian hymns and Buddhist hymns and Sanskrit hymns and Muslim hymns, and you name it. There was no holes barred for adoring the Lord in every conceivable name and form. And we would usually dress in white on Christmas, and we would come proceeding in a beautiful long procession, women in one group and men on the other, at dawn and Christmas morning. And we'd be carrying white candles, and we'd be singing Christmas carols in different languages. And then as we would gather under the balcony of the ashram, Sai Baba would come out. And I could always see his aura. It was just so magnificent. The aura was brilliant, intense gold. And then there would be blue and a beautiful pale pink and gold that would radiate all around him. And it was interesting because when he would move away from the spot that he was standing on the balcony, there would be this globe of white light that would remain. It would kind of float around him while he was standing there, and then it would just stay there for some time after he had left. I don't really know what that meant, but it was a very, very beautiful experience. The hush that would fall, the sanctity, I don't even have words really to do it justice. But you still have an opportunity to go to India to be with Baba. He's going to be in his body for about 14 more years. And he's 82 right now, so he'll be leaving his body at 96 Indian time, 97 our count. And I would certainly go if I had a chance, which I have. So during some of our interviews, he would call the Westerners in during Christmas time and talk about the life of Jesus. He said that Jesus was a soul called a Karana Janma in Sanskrit, which means a soul born for a specific purpose, and that he was such a pure soul that there was not the slightest trace of ego or selfishness anywhere in him. He was born, he had already attained that level where he was absolutely perfect in terms of what we would understand that to be like. as we know from the scriptures, he initially came as the Messiah to save the house of Judah, those who had been lost, and to restore them back into their original birthright and heritage. Then, after his resurrection, he actually extended that light and that call and that opportunity to all of mankind, taking that karmic burden that had been engendered upon the human race from the fall, and restoring us once again into direct relationship and fellowship with the Father, and also opening again access to the higher throne worlds of God, which had been put under a quarantine since the fall in Atlantis. So he opened the gateways of glory once again so that man didn't need to have an intermediary between their relationship with God and the direct throne of God. They could go directly before the Creator, so to speak, spiritually. And we all know that the Father is within us as the I Am presence. The Son is within us as the soul. And we, of course, are the emissaries of light, the celestial emissaries that manifest that light as an ark of the living covenant in the human body. So we have an inner alignment, but also we live and move and have our being within a divine unfolding of radiance that we call the throne worlds of God, or the heart of God, from which we in highest truth have never departed. Some people call that Parabrahman or the Atma. And we just like to call it the divine throne worlds. So Jesus, during the time he was 2 years old, Herod, and he was about two, I believe, chronologically, when Herod said that he wanted all of the children beneath the age of two to be killed. So an angel came to the stepfather Joseph in the night and warned Joseph to take Mary and Jesus to Egypt. However, Baba said that he actually didn't stay in Egypt all that time until Herod passed away, but was actually taken up into the brotherhood amongst those groups of people in the Tibetan Himalayas and those areas where the Brotherhood has those strongholds, often called outposts of Shambhala, or various apertures into the Agartian communities. There's many, many places where the precious ones that come are safeguarded until they can grow up their body and begin their mission. Jesus stayed with his family until the age of 15, according to Sai Baba. And then he had been helping his father in his carpentry work. Apparently Joseph was a carpenter, but Jesus had no interest in the world and no interest in carpentry. He wanted to, fulfill the mission of service to humanity that he knew from the time he was born, very, very young child. He knew that he was here to be the light of the world, and to restore humanity's lost sense of divinity. So during those so-called lost years, Jesus, at the age of 15, joined the caravan of his uncle and traveled, according to Baba, throughout the known world at that time, which was throughout India, where he studied in the temple of Lord Jagannatha in Orissa Puri. He studied with the Tibetans up in the high Himalayas. In fact, there's a lineage of yogis who to this day trace their parampara, the original guru of that lineage, to Saint Isa, which is the what he's called in India and throughout Tibet. He's known as Saint Isa or Isa Not. Not, N-A-T-H, means Lord. So these yogis all trace their lineage back to Isa, or Jesus. There is, in the Himis Monastery, I think it's up near Leh Ladakh, but anyway, it's high in the Himalayas. There was at one point, I believe, that since this original discovery, the records have somehow been taken away, whether by the Brotherhood or by the dark forces, I'm not sure. But two people that I know of were able to go to the Himisk Monastery and read the story of St. Isa, which tells the whole story of Jesus, his travels and all of his experiences in Tibet and throughout India and Asia and the known civilized world at that time, and then when he returned to his homeland and was crucified by the legalists at that time and the corrupt priesthood. And then, we'll go back to his early years. So Jesus was taken in those early years, 15 to 25, when he was doing this traveling around and learning in the ashrams and the various places where they had the learned and the wise ones, and preparing for his mission and becoming an adept in the yogic arts and meditational arts. During that time, he was taken to be a wandering sadhu, meaning a mendicant, a seeker. He was very much like any other person at that time in that he wandered with his very poor garments on and probably with a begging bowl like most sadhus do, depending upon the householders to feed them as they travel about, usually staying over the night in ashrams, sleeping on a mat on the floor. That's the common way people live even today when they're mendicants and seekers. Sai Baba said that he traveled up into the Himalayas and began a series of integrations and divine awakenings at that point that mirror three stages that Sai Baba said all of us go through. He said initially Jesus saw himself as the messenger of God. As he went deeper into his meditations, he realized he was the Son of God. And then at one point he went into Nirvikalpa Samadhi, which is non-differentiated oneness with God. And he said, I and the Father are one. Sai Baba said that likewise we go through three stages that mirror these same integrative processes. The first one being, the light is in me. The second, I am in the light. And the third, I am the light. So in that process, he had his first Nirvikalpa Samadhi experience in the Himalayas. And it was thereafter that he eventually came down and went back to his homeland. And then the story picks up in the Gospels at age 30. Sai Baba said that actually the greatest devotee of Jesus was Matthew, and that Matthew spent a lot of time sitting taking notes all during the time that Jesus taught the various fishermen, which apparently he did on a regular basis. And Matthew, I guess because he was a tax collector and good at keeping records, was the one that kept very meticulous records, which later we have in the Gospel of Matthew. He said also Peter and Luke, Peter and Thomas were very, very close to Jesus also during that time. They were some of his earliest disciples. And during that time, he exemplified the highest degree of what we would call yogic self-realized states of consciousness. And you have to bear in mind also that Jesus was not of this world. He often said that he was not of this world. He came from Venus. He's an aspect manifestation of the one that we know as Sananda Kumara, one of the Venusian Kumaras, and came into this embodiment from another world and from what he referred to as his father's kingdom, which, of course, we know as the imperishable star worlds of the God worlds beyond the realms and planetary worlds of duality. The clouds that Jesus was picked up in continually, if you read the scriptures, he was caught up in clouds. There was voices that spoke from the clouds. And of course, we know these as the ionized fields around the Merkabic Zohar bodies that are coalescence points of agreement that look like spaceships, but are actually manifestations of divine consciousness. The reason why I like to differentiate very much between the Merkaba and the UFO is that the UFO actually was the attempt of the fallen ones to do through technology that which can only be accomplished through the fire of the heart and complete consecration to selfless divinity. Out of that consciousness of selfless, fiery devotion to the all that is and passion to serve is birthed these higher bodies of light. And the one that's the highest is the Zohar body. And when it fans out in an energy field around the aura, it looks very much like a UFO, or the Sombrero galaxy is an exact way that that aura and that light body appears. Sometimes when you see a lot of them in the Assyrian art forms, you will see the god form from the waist up. And usually that's the Zohar body. They're depicting the Zohar body. And usually it'll be the form just showing the waist all the way up without any hips or legs visible. And that symbolizes the transcendental body that I'm speaking of. So this was constant. Jesus came and went all the time in the spaceships, and angels appeared. And the angel, the word angelo simply means messenger in Greek. So there's nothing that tells us in truth that angels have wings or are supernatural beings at all, even though we know there are devic forms that we now in Western esotericism call angels. A lot of that has been brought into kind of a mythology since the Middle Ages, when people were not lettered, they didn't read, they had to have very graphic depictions of truth, otherwise they couldn't comprehend. You couldn't comprehend a transdimensional being in those days without drawing a person with wings. So as we continue our seminars each week on understanding and also bridging science and spirituality and religious doctrines and understandings, particularly Christianity, which has gotten so far afield of the original intent. It's been so set off into a valence that I know Jesus never intended to have it happen that way. I know when I was sitting in one of the interviews with Sai Baba, the interpreter was interpreting what Baba said, and he made a mistake and he said, "Your Jesus." And Sai Baba said, "No, no, no. Our Jesus. Jesus came for all mankind." So we have to go beyond this thought of thinking that Muhammad came only for the Muslim, and Krishna came only for the Vedantin, and Jesus came only for the Christian, and the Buddhist came, and Buddha came only for Buddhists. Bear in mind, there were none of these religions when these great ones came. No religion and no scripture. So all of these things arose after the fact, and because they arose after the fact, there's bound to be plenty of gaps in the story and misunderstanding, because whenever you bring a spiritual truth down in through the mental, lower mental body, which is the seat of the ego, that's the form that the ego takes, is that lower mind, then of course you're going to have distortion. So let's just erase any thought of differentiation between the Lords of Light, and just let's inquire into this possible phenomena we have on the earth today, which is this present avatar who claims to be the Father who sent Jesus. He said that Jesus himself never said he would come again. He said, "The Father who sent me will come." And I wonder how that could be. I've searched the scriptures, and you know what? I finally came upon it. It's in the parable of the vineyard owner. And you can read it yourself. I won't go to the trouble to read it right now. But it mentions very clearly that after many were sent and they were dealt with unpleasantly, that finally the owner of the vineyard said, "Well, I'll send my beloved son. Surely they'll respect him." But instead they killed him. Then the owner of the vineyard, i.e. the earth, said, "I will come myself." And that is the Father. Sai Baba said in one interview that mankind had gotten so far off track that there was no way that humanity could get back on track, that he who actually built the ancient highway himself had to come and set it once again straight. So I personally believe that's true, only because I've made it my lifetime inquiry to look, to check it out. But always I would have to say my heart has told me that this is the truth. I have never had any doubt from the time I have been exposed to Baba to now that he is exactly who he says he is, even though I don't understand it. No one understands it, really. Who can? I certainly can appreciate what I have seen and experienced through these many, many years of association with him. I was very interested in the crucifixion. And Sai Baba, I was sitting just a few feet away from him when he described the crucifixion. He said it actually occurred, and it was a great symbolic representation of what we all must do. If we would be Christ, we must cross out the I. We must cross the I. And Sai Baba wrote down on a piece of paper, Christ, and then he drew a line through the I. We have to cross out that ego. He said when Jesus was crucified, his hands were pierced, which meant no more would his hands, would the hands be used for anything of the flesh, of the body consciousness. The same with the feet. The feet would no longer do the path of the ego and the path of searching for sensation and security and power in the outer world. The piercing on the side meant the death to body consciousness. The crown of thorns represented Dai mind, that the mind, the lower mind, was also pierced and crucified. He went through every little bit of the crucifixion. And then sometime later, this wasn't during this interview, but sometime later he had materialized the small cross for Dr. Jack Hislop, who was a close friend of mine. And I was able to actually hold that cross in my hand. And when he materialized it, he had picked off two twigs as he was walking with Dr. Hislop. And he asked Dr. Hislop what that was, and he replied, well, it's a cross, Swami. And so then he took the two sticks, and he blew on it slowly three times and materialized this cross. He said it took him a while to reassemble the atoms of the original cross upon which Christ had been crucified, because after all of these years, there was not even a sliver of that wood left. On the crucifixion is a silver figure of Jesus as he looked exactly at the moment of his death, with all the blood in his veins coagulating so that you see these knots all along his body. And his body was very thin because he was tortured and starved for a week, Baba said. And so his body was in very, very poor condition. Baba said that he raised his physical body from the dead, and that it was not a light body or an etheric body or anything like that, but he actually overcame death through the resurrection, which is, you know, what we've always believed in Christianity. But it's good to hear that and to have that confirmed by someone who would really know more than a bunch of people who wrote down things from hearsay and even direct experience, but years after the fact. It was fun for me to be with Sai Baba because he would tell these endearing stories about Jesus and how, for example, his mother, he and his mother were very close, and his mother was very much a devotee of the Lord, and she taught little Jesus at a very young age to do Nama Japa, which is the repetition of the names of God, and to observe all of the, bear in mind she was an initiate, also of the Brotherhood. And so, yes, she taught him the Torah, she taught him all of the things in the Jewish faith, but she also taught him the esoteric wisdom, because she knew that he was going to be the Messiah and would have a great mission to fulfill, as did Joseph. Interestingly enough, they claim that Joseph now is the Count Saint Germain that lifetime as the stepfather of Jesus was one of his earlier lifetimes. Interesting thought. We also have been told that Peter is now the Master Moria, Master M, and that John the Beloved was the Master Kutumi, and Paul is the Master Hilarion. That's kind of well-known knowledge amongst the esoteric Alice Bailey crew. But I find it very interesting to remind people that we don't stay those same people, but we keep returning with the Lord and doing even greater work for Him. Consider that perhaps you've had some wonderful histories with Buddha and Krishna and Rama and Jesus, and now you're incarnated at the time of this great avatar, Sai Baba, and you have a role to play. What is that role? What will you be used for? I've been used as, I like to call myself a megaphone or a trumpet. Right after I came back from that first trip with Sai Baba, I was sent to 11 different esoteric groups where I told my story. And many people came out of that and became very involved with Sai Baba. I was one of the first bhajan leaders in North America. And I didn't plan that. It was just a great blessing to be used in that manner. So the prophecy that I was instrumental in giving was drawing the correlation between the rider on the white horse, Kalki Avatar, and which is the 10th avatar of Mahavishnu, which I believe is Sai Baba, coming in those three lifetimes, Shirdi Sai Baba, Satya Sai Baba, and Prema Sai Baba. It's called the Trikaya, three manifestations. And in this case, he is... I believe, this is my own spin on it, but I believe that Shirdi Baba represented the Father Universe, Satya Sai Baba represents the Sun Universe, and that Prema Sai Baba, since he's going to be embodying the Shakti Principle, will be manifesting the Shekinah Universe. So you're seeing the three phases of time, the three Maha Manvantaras of manifestation, of evolution, for these three huge divine programs, which are gone into in more detail in the Keys of Enoch. But just to leave that research for you if you're interested, but just to share that with you. Sai Baba knows who your Ishta Devata is, your chosen image of God. And many times he would materialize rings with Jesus or the cross on it for people who were Christian. And one woman came with a picture of the shroud, and she asked what Jesus really looked like. And he waved his hand over this picture of the shroud, and this beautiful image of Jesus came out of that. And he said, he looked like that. And now sometimes you can find that picture and buy it. I've got it right now as I'm doing this show. I'm looking at it, and it is so beautiful. So the prophecy was... as I was mentioning, in the Bible, it's called the Second Coming of Christ. And this is the rider on the white horse. And I will read exactly what Sai Baba said that day, because when I had written this article, or actually it was a letter, a personal letter to Baba's biographer, it had been published in Sai Baba's magazine, Sanatana Sarati, which means Ancient Charioteer. And it was entitled then as an article called The Prophecy Has Been Fulfilled. So this is what Baba said. There is one point that I cannot but bring to your special notice today. At the moment when Jesus was merging into the supreme principle of divinity, he communicated some news to his followers, which has been interpreted in a variety of ways by commentators and those who relish the piling of writings on writings and meanings upon meanings, until it all swells up into a huge mess. The statement itself has been manipulated and tangled into a conundrum. The statement of Christ is simple. He who sent me among you will come again. And he pointed to a lamb. The lamb is merely a symbol, a sign. It stands for the voice, Ba, Ba. The announcement was the advent of Baba, which means Father or Abba. His name will be Truth, Christ declared, Satya means truth. He will wear a robe of red, a blood-red robe. Here Baba pointed to the robe he was wearing. He will be short with a crown of hair. The lamb is the sign and symbol of love. Christ did not declare that he will come again. He said, he who made me will come again. That Baba is this Baba. And Sai, the short, curly-haired, crowned, red-robed Baba, has come. He is not only in this form, but he is present in every one of you as the dweller in your heart. He is there, short, with a robe, the color of the blood that fills it. You too, like everyone else, are with God, in God, but you are not aware of that fortune. You are struck with strange wonder and joy when you see God during meditation. You are overcome with ecstasy. The fact is, it is only something beyond the natural, above the ordinary, that arouses interest. So you must overcome this failing. Spiritual joy, wonder, appreciation, and the presence of God must become the very breath of your life. So I was actually sitting at his feet, not even 2 feet from him, when he made that statement, which was the same year that my letter was also published as the prophecy is fulfilled. We are in a time that apparently, what if this is so? I'm just going to put it as a postulation, because apparently the Armageddon, the Antichrist, the really negative scenario that was to have occurred, from what I can understand from my research of Baba's teachings, was consummated in the First and Second World Wars. Apparently, we are now in a different time phase prophetically than many of us have believed or have been led to think of. It's possible, if the truth is that we are actually in 2012 rather than 2007, that we are actually in the very, very point when we make that dramatic crossover into the different vibration. I want to share with you that as a possibility, because even though it seems like the biblical end time scenario is prophetically what's taking place, unless it's occurring in a different timeline interpretation, which is entirely possible because we have multiplicities of realities that are concluding right now, unless that's so, apparently we are finished with the worst of Armageddon, and we are going to be going, as Sai Baba has said all along, things will get brighter and brighter and more beautiful for all of the people who love God. He said all of those who are rooted firmly in devotion to the Lord, by whichever name, under whichever form that makes your heart ring and sing with devotion, you are being protected. And you will be living in more and more happiness, more and more peace, more and more joy. And boy, I can say that's certainly been true for me and my family and the people that I know that I keep company with. We're all in that state. The wonderful thing about Baba is that he comes, he says he's often come to take from us the most hideous parts of our nature, the most shameful things we've done, the places where we just shrink that anyone would know that about ourselves, the places where we feel totally unloving and unacceptable. He said, come, bring all of that to me. Bring all of the ravages, all of the sorrows, all of the fears, all of the misery that you've had. Come and give it to me, and I will take it. And take from me bliss. I love that process of exchange. And he said he has come not so much for the good and the righteous as he has from the people who are totally destitute and fallen and outright evil. But he has come, it says in the Bible, he comes with a double-edged sword in his mouth. And what that means is that he's come with a word that's sharp as the sword. And it's the word of truth. And for the good, it releases them through liberation. And for the evil, it cuts that that negative cording around them. It sets them free. It begins to deal with them in a way that transforms them. And it's all having to do with the mind, how the mind became the bastion of illusion and Maya. And Baba has come to correct that mind, that mental principle that keeps us in bondage. I know from the time I first came to him almost 40 years ago, my mind, I used to worry so much. I was so intellectual. And in these many years, I've come to a state where I don't even have any thoughts in my mind. My mind is like a clear, pellucid lake. I don't think I can move to direct awareness and direct knowing, but there's just this incredibly deep peace that's in me all the time, and deep, deep love. And that is what is available for every one of you. The way that you cap that mind and prevent it from being a gerbil cage of repeating litanies of misery is that you use the name of God to consume vibrationally the negative energies. So you repeat the name of the Lord, whatever, Om Sai Ram or Jesus Christ or whatever name you really causes your heart to ring. Repeat that under your breath and your mind over and over, and it will consume, transmute, and completely remove worry and negative thinking. The name of the Lord dissolves, according to Sai Baba, mountains of sin. It just consumes it like a fire. So replace worry with repetition of the name of the Lord. Baba said this was practiced by early Christians for many, many years, and it's still practiced by the many of the Orthodox, Greek and Russian Orthodox monks in the Catholic tradition. I continue with what Sai Baba has to say about right now. This is his direct words. It's from a book I highly recommend called The Scriptures Are Fulfilled by Christina Gail Kumar. And this was blessed by Baba, and presumably it's accurate. I mean, this is accurate. It's quoting him. Though the immediate future may look dark for those who are ready and have chosen to say yes to God in whatever form, all will be well, for the new age of light and love will dawn very soon. So why fear when I am here? In each age, the divine has incorporated itself as an avatar for some particular task. This incarnation is different in that it has to deal with the crisis which is worldwide and world-shaking. Hence, this incarnation has come to uphold the true and to suppress the false. I shall scorch the wrongdoer for his wrong and soothe the virtuous for his righteousness. Justice shall be meted out to all. Therefore, watch for the blow I inflict all of a sudden, to chastise and to warn. The day of awakening is here, and the day of reckoning, or weeding out, is not far away. The cleansing of the world will take place, and only those awakened souls will be left to experience life in the divine state. Others will fall by the wayside, left behind and lost in a world of illusion and darkness. The age of preparation precedes the golden age, and it is during this time that the sorting out process takes place. So seize the opportunity that all of you have been given to rise above the material level and manifest once again in the divine state. The arrival of the golden age will be heralded by a new coming as well as some upheavals sufficient to uproot the evil that is so prevalent today. But change will come, and when it comes, there will be a revelation of the true power of God, a manifestation of the omnipresence of the Lord. This will be the signal for a great move forward and the weeding out of those who are not ready to accept the challenge of the moment. It will be just so. Mark my words, but few will listen, very few. After the storm, there will be a new beginning, and the atmosphere will be completely different. It will be like a new age, the age of love. Harmony and cooperation replacing the age of war, fighting, hatred, jealousy, greed, and all those negative aspects of life. Everyone should prepare now for this change, for I promise you that it will come, and only those who are ready will survive. I have given the warning. I have given my message 1,000 times, and no one who hears my words can claim ignorance. Do not delay. Put right your own lifestyle and change it to the way of God. There is no other way. And that was given somewhere in the 1980s, as far as I can tell, although it's not dated. And in summation of his message, he says, but all is not lost. All can be saved. A new age dawns, and the divine avatar is here in your very midst. How lucky you are to be here at the same time. Do you realize that? So fill the world with love, for it is love alone that can save man and the earth itself from destruction. Love is the foundation of the whole universe. God is love, and love is the only route that leads to God, and therefore salvation and eternal bliss. Love leads to unity and a realization of the truth that all are one. Approach everyone and everything with love. See love manifesting all around you, in the flowers, the trees, every part of nature, all part of God. Be like a beacon in the sky, radiating love and light. You should shine forth like a star from the moment of awakening in the morning until the moment comes for sleep at night. If you really do this, your whole body and mind will be cleansed, because it is my love which is vibrating within you, and its power is unlimited. Sing and laugh and enjoy life. Put behind you all worry and fear, all doubts of any kind. Know that I am God. Know that you are God. Know that there is only God, only one complete unity, pure love, pure divinity. I give my love and blessings to all of you. So, all we have to do, literally, is place ourselves completely and fully, with no trace of ego, in the hands of the Lord, and to do our duty with love. That is it in a nutshell. Offer your work to the Lord with love. Don't grasp for the fruit of it. Just offer it to the Lord. Do it because it's your duty. Do it with all your heart, with love and devotion. Know that all these walking temples that we call men and women moving about us every day is only the Lord. There's only one divine current lighting up all of those bulbs that we call bodies. They're like electrical bulbs, and that one current illuminating every bulb is one and only one, and that is the Lord. That is the Father. That is the Creator. That is the Christ. That is the Holy Spirit. And that is our reality. Baba said that there is no possibility of us failing to move into the golden age. There is no possibility for the destruction of our planet. There will not be a nuclear holocaust. He has come specifically to prevent that from happening. So be happy, live good lives, divine lives. And know that, as Baba said in our interview, Christ never is born. Christ wasn't born in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago, because Christ is pure divine love that has neither birth nor death, neither waxing or waning, neither reason nor season. It simply is the very nature of God, and that is who you are. So live in love, and love all, and serve all, and thus you will be already moving into the golden age, and you won't have to wait to ascend. You won't have to wait for Ashtar to come in his ship and beam you up. You won't have to wait for Prince Charming to come on a white horse. You won't have to wait for Christ to return. Christ returns the moment you realize that you are the Holy Son of God, and in highest truth, you have never left the Father. The Father is in you. You are in the Father, and the Father and you are one. So if we have the representation of the Father on earth in the form of Sri Satya Sai Baba, as I believe and many millions of people around the world believe, then let's indeed celebrate this as the Festival of Light, as the coming of great love once again to reveal the very image and likeness of God in our midst in this time. Let us get involved and serve this humanity and lift it into a golden age. Let's build the temples, the ashrams. Let us sing the songs of praise and celebration. And let us greet this new dispensation, this new era that each and every one of us have been born to co-create and co-facilitate. The united blessings of the Ashtar Command rests with each one of you. And we are so, so happy to be able to speak to you each week and to join with you in building the Golden Age and greeting the Lords of Light as they come from this and a myriad of worlds to externalize into the outer world. And we will go out with our show chanting the Hue, or let's do Yeshua tonight because it's the name of Jesus. Yes, you are. God bless you, Adonai, and Merry Christmas.